Our final argument for today is docket number 23-1524. This is Kids 2 LLC versus Tomy International. Mr. Kuo, you see that we this morning have the physical exhibit. It turns out it could be useful after all, but we'll keep it up here to make sure we're keeping track of what you're arguing.
Sure. May it please the court. Good morning. I think it's still morning. I'm not actually sure if that.
Just barely.
Barely. Okay. This patent case, like many patent cases, hinges on the issue of claim construction. Unfortunately, in this case, for the reasons set forth in the briefing, the district court erred in many respects with respect to its claim construction. And then based on this erroneous claim construction, the district court erroneously granted summary judgment of no infringement and partially excluded Tomy's technical expert. And just by, just to back up one second, Kids 2 was a change in name, so I'll probably refer to it as Summer Infant, just because that's what's in my head.
And you're representing Summer
Tomy.
Representing Tomy.
Tomy, right. Procedurally, Summer Infant filed a DJ action, which is what promulgated this case. As Your Honor has already indicated, the patent at issue is for a multi-stage juvenile bathtub. And by multi-stage, what is meant is that the tub includes features that allow the tub to continue to be used with children as they grow. So infants who can't really support their head and don't have body control,
I think we understand all of that.
You have two infringement theories, right? One is vis-a-vis the accused product. One is based on an idea that what we'll just call the hump, right? That hump wall on the toddler side is some kind of intervening structure that can join the distal edge of the toddler's seat to, I guess, the distal edge of the infant seat.
Correct. Right?
That's one theory.
Correct.
The second theory is, for the toddler seat again, you rely on what I'll just call the flat area of the toddler seat, as well as the hump wall that is in direct communication with that flat seat. Those two pieces together make up the seating surface for the toddler, right?
It depends. So, yes, in answer to your question. But our position is that the district court erred in its claim construction by requiring that the distal edge of the toddler side touch the distal edge of the infant side. So
this goes to theory number one then.
Correct.
Of the two that I just mentioned.
Correct.
Okay.
Even under the court's erroneous claim construction, we believe that there's still infringement under theory number two, as you've laid out.
Okay. So which one do you want to talk about first? Theory number one?
Theory number one, yes.
Okay. So now I have a question.
Sure.
Which raises the question of, even if you are right about the term joined at, that could contemplate intervening structures, and therefore the hump wall between the toddler's seating surface and what I'll just call the apex is just an appropriate intervening structure that's permitted, then the question still remains for that theory, how is the seating surface for the toddler something that has an incline in it? Because it is flat going across.
Okay. With respect to that,
I didn't see you face up to that in your gray brief.
To be fair, I didn't actually recognize that as the argument being made. But the horizontal, let's assume that it is completely flat, the toddler side. The patent actually contemplates that as, it's an incline of zero, but it's still something that's measurable. The patent actually speaks specifically about the toddler side having a horizontal angle, let's call it. And I could point you to, and this is in the patent itself, at APPX 115, column 5, line 54, and it talks about the generally horizontal seating surface 70, and that refers to figure 2 from the patent, which is also in the briefing. And in figure 2, which is actually on the cover page as well, 70 is shown to be the seating for the toddler side.
And we're talking about figure 13?
Yes, I'm sorry. Yeah, figure 13.
Figure 13, okay.
I misspoke.
So, I mean, to me, I didn't take from this patent as suggesting that element 70 by itself would be the inclined seating surface. The inclined seating surface would necessarily have to be the extension, the ramp that extends from element 70 on the toddler side in order to achieve the claimed inclined seating surface for this side of the washtub.
I disagree, Your Honor.
Okay, now I'm getting interested as to where in your litigation below or your litigation here did you tell either us or the district court that, this flat part, because mm-hmm. we all agree it's flat, we all agree it's horizontal, can count as an inclined seating surface.
Because the district court issued its claim construction, I'm sorry, in our claim charts that we submitted with the summary judgment briefing, we identified specifically that flat section, assuming that it's not inclined at all, but that section of the toddler seat as constituting the seating surface of the toddler side. So that's where it's identified. And I would point out that as far as your reading of the patent doesn't talk about the seating surface 70, which it describes as generally horizontal.
Yeah.
It doesn't say that, and that's what's claimed. The claim is specific to the seating surface. And
having differing inclinations. So
right, and this is
each seating surface has to be inclined in some way.
Well, horizontal is a measurable incline.
Do you have evidence below that a 0% incline can be an incline?
Well, I think that comes down to whether that's a finding of fact.
No, but do you have evidence that you presented to the district court that that's part of your infringement?
Sure, our expert witness, he opined that the horizontal surface is the toddler side seating surface.
And is that a different incline you're saying than the seating surface elsewhere? Like how does a 0% incline help you meet the claim limitation about the different inclinations?
Well, they're different inclinations. One is horizontal, one is pitched somewhat.
Yes, but what if both of them have to be inclined? I mean, what if the plain ordinary meaning of this claim requires two differing inclined seating surfaces? I mean, this is the first time I've ever heard or read that a 0% incline, a flat surface, can also be understood as an inclined surface. In other words, forget about the word incline.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't matter anymore because you can have any position of the surface and it's going to meet the inclined surface requirement.
I was with you until the very end of that question.
Okay, so non-inclined is also inclined. That's what I'm hearing right now. That's what I need help on.
I'm saying that horizontal is a type of incline that's measurable at it is zero.
So is there anything that's not inclined then in your view?
No.
So everything is inclined, even
in the context of this patent, yes. Because weight of patent.
So I want to just get in here because I had looked at something in the record. So do you have your appendix hopefully with you?
I do.
Can we turn to appendix page 1497?
1497.
97.
Yes.
And I understand this is filed under seal, so I don't know if I can speak in open court about what's actually stated, but at a minimum, I'd like you to look at beginning around page 170, line 23, through page 171, line 13.
Yes.
The way I saw that testimony stated was that maybe there had been some evidence put forth indicating that the toddler's seating surface is inclined. That's what I'm seeing in this particular language. I won't say it, but I thought that that might be an answer to some of the questions that were posed.
Yes, and this is, I'm sorry. So as I said, this is the testimony of our expert witness. I'm not really sure if there is a confidentiality issue here, but this is the testimony of our expert witness when asked about the seating surfaces for the toddler side. And like I said, Judge Chen, you've described the toddler side as being flat. I don't actually agree with that. There is some form to it.
But earlier just said you agreed it was flat.
No, I said if it was flat, it still would be fall within the scope of the claim. And why I'm saying that is because of what the specification teaches, which is that the horizontal portion 70 is the seating surface.
I mean, at Gray Brief 23, you call it a horizontal seating surface.
Yes.
Is horizontal something different than flat?
I suppose it is. I mean, a horizontal surface can have, if you look at an overall surface that's horizontal but might have some curves to it, it's still horizontal.
I mean, I'm just troubled because I don't see anywhere in your blue brief or your gray brief where you say this accused tub's seating surface for the toddler side has an incline in it, and so that is what meets the claim limitation. I know you have theory number two, which is, well, we're also going to rely, we're going to do a combination between the flat surface and then the hump wall, and then the hump wall is clearly inclined. It's practically a 90-degree inclination. So in that way, that version of a seating surface, assuming it's a seating surface, has an incline in it. But I don't see anywhere in your briefing where you say just the flat part itself is inclined and therefore meets the claim limitation.
I think the problem there is because we're addressing the orders that came down from the district court where theory number one, where the flat portion that's connected via the ramped up portion, that was a claim construction that was rejected by the district court. So in our summary judgment briefing, that wasn't the argument that was made. So in the summary judgment briefing, we said even under your construction, where we take the combination of the horizontal portion and the ramp portion.
Right.
If as I hope you do, reverse the district court's claim construction, and we have to go back and argue whether the horizontal part is meets the incline, that's a different issue. But that's not one that was raised below.
But, I mean, we have a district court decision at A8 where the district court says, you know, the patent calls for two seating surfaces that rise at different angles. Quote, the accused tub has a flat bottom surface with a central pump to prevent an infant from slipping. These structures are not equivalent, and neither the facts nor the admitted expert testimony can support Tomy's infringement theory. In other words, the judge is seeing the seating surface as flat, and the seating surfaces, according to the claims, have to be rising at some kind of angle.
And as Judge Cunningham correctly pointed out, our expert actually testified to the fact that there is a slight inclination.
But you didn't raise that in your brief to us.
Again,
I mean, you're digging out, or thanks to Judge Cunningham, she's digging out something that was stated somewhere in the record with no support. In the same place, the expert says he didn't do any measurements. You know, he's just eyeballing it. And then he's saying different versions. He's at a later point on the page, he talks about it's more of a flat inclination. It's basically horizontal is what he's saying. We don't, You haven't made the argument, is my point. And so I don't know why we would be entertaining an argument at this point.
My argument is a claim construction argument.
Right. Your argument is about the intervening structure. There can be an intervening
Correct.
Structure for joining two things. I'm saying, so what? What if we give you that? Then what is the accused seating surface for the toddler? And it's flat. It doesn't have an incline unless we believe non-inclined seats, seating surfaces, are in fact inclined seating surfaces.
You would then have to go to what is the scope of the claim with respect to incline. And as I've mentioned this, the way the patent is written, it says that the horizontal section of the toddler seat, which is horizontal, is the seating surface. And therefore, necessarily, the inclined surface of the toddler can be zero.
Can we talk a little bit? I know we're, I guess, through your time. But
yes, I know.
Theory 2 or 2A, I don't know now, takes account of the hump in the middle being part of the seating surface,
yes.
correct?
Yes.
What is the limit on that in your view? Like, why is that part of the seating surface? And would you say the back is also part of the seating surface? Or if there were armrests, that they would be part of the seating surface? If not, why not?
Certainly not the back. The back is a separately recited element of the claim. There are backrests. The claim recites that there's a backrest and then a seating surface extends from the backrest.
Okay, fair enough. But what makes the hump, or and I don't know if it's all of the hump or just part of the hump, what makes that the seating surface? Is it doing something that we would think of as actually helping one sit?
Sure. It helps support the child. So with an infant, for example, as they slide down. It's a tub. It's slippery. The soap and everything. As they slide down, as the documents say, and I don't think there's any dispute about this, that the hump and the surface of the hump, of course, serves as a stop.
So what if I had an embodiment where I know this would never sell. I'm confident, but where I built a structure up over the tub, mm-hmm. like a harness to hold the baby, the infant. Back and I removed the hold or the hump. You're saying on your logic, all of what I've built up, that superstructure to restrain the baby, that would be part of the seating surface.
I'm not actually envisioning what you're describing, but I don't.
Have you ever been to an amusement park where they pull down?
Oh, you're talking about a harness.
Yeah, a harness. Let's call it.
Oh, okay.
If I put a harness over this, that's part of the seating structure. Seating surface, excuse me.
I don't think so, Your Honor.
Why not?
Because a harness is, in the example that I gave with the baby sliding, it's still the weight of the child that's resting against that portion of the...
Well, in my example, the weight is being pulled back by the harness. What's the difference?
I don't really agree with that. I mean, the harness is acting as a barrier to, if you come to a sudden stop, then you slam into it, but you're not resting on top of it.
I guess the question is, why isn't this pump likewise a restraint, and as opposed to a seating surface? I mean, what if instead of a hump, again, nobody would buy this version, but what if there was like a metal pole sticking up out of the bottom, vertical pole? Clearly, it's going to block the toddler, who's sitting upright over here, right, from slipping forward or sliding forward. You know, she's got a pole, like, mm-hmm. right there, like a foot-tall pole.
Notwithstanding the commercial impracticalities of it.
Would the pole be a seating surface?
Part of it would, because as if the child's weight in the tub is supported by that pole, it is therefore a surface on which the child is seated.
What if there's nice little armrests right here, you know, because the one-year-old likes to perch like this. Is that a seating surface? My armrest right here is supporting my weight. Is that a seating surface?
In the context of this patent, it would not be, because the patent talks about seating surface as part of the bottom surface.
Okay. So anything on the bottom surface, including the pole, would be a seating surface. Not because not because the toddler's posterior is somehow touching up against the pole, but just because the
it supports
somehow the pole is not only holding the toddler in a particular place, but also because there's going to be a way for the toddler to apply some of its weight up against the pole?
The last part.
That sounds pretty uncomfortable.
That's why it wouldn't be a commercially practical situation, but does it fit within the scope of the claim? Yes.
Okay.
I want to just ask one question before I assume we're...
Do you want to hold it?
I will hold it, but I don't need it for my question. But I'll have it over here. I think you also indicated that you thought there were errors in terms of summary judgment. I'm assuming that you're pinning that on some potential genuine issues of disputes of fact.
Yes, Your Honor.
Do you want to just sum those up in, 10 seconds?
It's basically, we did submit our expert report and his findings as to that how each limitation is met. That's something that a jury could consider. I think that was 7 seconds, but I'm not sure.
Okay. We will reserve at least some time for rebuttal.
Okay. Thank you, Your Honor.
Okay. And let's hear from Mr. Rodriguez, and if you could go ahead and set him up with 20 minutes. If he needs it, maybe he won't.
We'll see. Good morning, Your Honors, and may it please the Court. So the fundamental issue in this case, which I think Your Honors grasped on in questioning of Tomy's counsel, is that the tub as designed does not have two seating surfaces disposed at differing inclinations. And in our view, that it moots infringement on both theories of infringement. You have the tub, you've inspected it, our expert report in the record, it demonstrates that the seating surfaces are generally flat, and that those aren't at different inclinations, they don't join at an apex, and so there is no infringement under either theory.
If they're both generally flat but at different angles, could that potentially satisfy the different inclinations requirement?
So I'll answer your question. It's our position that it is flat, and the evidence, I think, supports that, and it's not actually, I think, contested. But if it was at different inclinations, I think it still wouldn't meet the claim limitations under either theory. Under the first theory, where I guess we would be assuming that there is a intervening portion connecting the pieces, I'm assuming the court wouldn't be reading out the join at the apex requirement of Claim 1. Right, and so even if you have an intervening structure, and you added that to the construction of Claim 1, it would still need to be an intervening structure that joins the two surfaces at an apex, and that's not there in this tub. Under the second...
I'm sorry, I didn't quite follow what you just said. Could you try again?
Sure.
Okay, so the hump wall is an intervening structure. We accept that, but there's still a problem with the distal edge of one seating surface being joined to the distal edge of the other seating surface through the intervening structure, because why?
So let me make sure I have the hypothetical clear. But this is a situation where the vertical wall on the infant side is presumed to be a seating surface. The horizontal surface of the toddler side is presumed to be a seating surface, and they're connected with the intervening portion, which counsel on the other side has highlighted in yellow in their briefs. Is that
right.
Correct? So I view their argument as attempting to read out join at the apex from Claim 1.
Is this the direct connection dispute?
Yes, okay. Yes, right. So you could see a universe where, I suppose that we disagree with it, where you add this intervening structure to Claim 1, but I don't think that justifies removing joining at the apex out of Claim 1, right? And in this tub...
Why wouldn't this tub meet that?
Because it's what's being joined is the distal edges of the seating surface.
Right.
And I'm going to refer to a figure, though, because I think it might...
So, I mean, in a way, the apex itself is a bit of a intervening structure, so to speak, because the apex doesn't have to be a point. The apex itself could be a surface, so... The two distal edges are being joined at the apex. if the apex is an intervening structure, and then you have this hump wall as also being an intervening structure, why haven't you met the claim limitation?
So I'm going to refer to page 25 of our brief in answering your question. So this is page 25 of the red brief, where there's an image from their infringement report, which has the left seating surface in red, the alleged central bottom portion in yellow, and then the right seating surface portion in purple. In our view, in that situation, the distal edge of the left seating surface is down at the bottom, right? And the distal edge of the right seating surface would be up at the top. And those edges would not be joined at the apex. Now, if you had a different intervening structure that was, you know, flat across the top or something like that, perhaps that could still be joined at the apex. But in this situation, there's no joining at the apex, even if you
use... There's no direct joining.
Yeah, there's no direct joining at
the apex. If the district court's construction is wrong, there's indirect joining. Or at least the jury could find indirect joining.
And I guess our position on that is that that would be reading out joining at the apex out of the claim at that point.
Well, they see it as you're reading in a requirement for direct joining at the apex. That is their claim construction argument, right?
That is their claim construction argument, but I think we need to understand what's behind that claim construction argument. We have in claim one the plain terms join at the apex, and the way they approach the reasoning for why the court's construction is wrong is to focus on claim 18. And they pretend that claim 18 is this epitome of clarity in the specification when it's not. It refers to a central bottom portion, and that is a term that appears in the specification, but it's never used with reference to any other figure. It only appears once, and there's no explanation as to what was...
If one did read claim 18 and the central bottom portion as encompassing indirect joinder, then it has to follow under our law, doesn't it, that claim 1 would also have to be broad enough to include indirect joinder.
It doesn't follow that it would have to include it. So there's a dependent claim, and its meaning and scope can be an aid to construction, but we shouldn't be expanding the scope of claim 1.
So we could say that claim 18 just has no scope and is invalid.
Yeah, or
it
that
can't be broader than claim 1, right?
Right. I think in this situation it would be more of a superfluous claim element than invalid. I think they focus on...
Hold on a second. Yeah. The premise of Judge Stark's question was that claim 18 is clearly contemplating indirect joinder. And then you're saying, well, that shouldn't change the scope of claim 1. Claim 1 is restricted to direct joinder only. And so we can't say claim 18 is superfluous. Under your view, we would have to say claim 18 is invalid. Right?
I guess I was thinking of two separate parallel thoughts. There's one
on, well, let's stick with my thought.
Okay, let's stick
right?
with that. Yes.
Yes, invalid.
On the presumption that claim 1 requires direct joinder.
Well, that's what you
then,
want.
Yes. Yes. Right. Yes. Then claim 18 is likely invalid, and that's okay. Under federal
That's okay.
Precedent.
Okay.
Yes. On this point of claim 18 in the interpretation of the central bottom portion that they rely on for their claim construction, I do want to stress the prosecution history here, which is at
365.
So appendix 695. When during prosecution the Patent Office objected to the term disposed at different inclinations, applicants responded by pointing out that with respect to figure 13 in the patent, surface 64 forms one seating surface extending at inclination angle beta 1, and the other seating surface is formed by surface 70 and the extension of surface 70 that meets surface 64 at apex 66.
So, counsel, regarding the joined at limitation, do we need to resolve the issue of whether the seating surface on the toddler side in figure 13 that we've been talking about is just surface 70 or surface 70 and its extension?
So I don't think, with respect to the image in the patent, figure 13, I'm going to refer to the version of figure 13 that's on page 13 of our brief. Sorry, could you repeat the question? You need to decide.
Yeah, I'm asking regarding, we've been talking some about the joined at limitation, and I'm wondering to resolve the issue of, do we need to resolve the issue? I want you to answer this question.
Yes.
Of whether the seating surface on the toddler side in figure 13 is just surface 70, or is it surface 70 and the extension, and its extension? I think it interrelates with what I'm seeing right here on this appendix, page 695. That's why I'm posing the question.
Sure, sure. So I guess in one sense, I don't think you need to resolve it simply for the reasons that we talked earlier, which is that these are flat surfaces, and there's just no way that you could read this product on these claims. However, if we're in the universe of entertaining the claim construction argument about the intervening structures, then I think this is worth looking at, and perhaps you do need to make a conclusion here. Tomy argues that the unlabeled portion, which they've highlighted in yellow, between what's marked as 70 and 66, that's the central bottom portion. There's no support for that in the specification. It's never explained as such. The only time in the entire intrinsic record where this element is characterized is actually in the prosecution history by applicants themselves. And they characterize it as an extension of surface 70. But more than that, they say the seating surface is formed by both surface 70 and the extension of surface 70 that meets surface 64 at apex 66. That's a pretty clear explanation of this drawing and what applicants understood, that this seating surface was going to extend from what's marked 70.
It doesn't look as if apex 66 is even drawn as a single point. Isn't it drawn as an intervening structure itself?
Well, and that's why I was suggesting there is perhaps a universe where this vague and ambiguous concept of a central bottom portion could just be referring to that, you know, what we've colored in orange portion around apex 66.
Can I ask you, the district court's claim construction of the joinder term, the appellant argues it excludes an embodiment disclosed in the specification. I see you as implicitly agreeing with that because you spend a lot of time in the red brief arguing, but it's not a preferred embodiment. Do I understand you correctly? You just say it's not a preferred embodiment, but there is an embodiment that is excluded by the district court's construction.
I don't think we would say that there's an embodiment that that is excluded by the district court's construction. We do push back hard on the idea that this central bottom portion is part of the preferred embodiment. I think that's fairly clear from the specification that it's not part of the preferred embodiment. There is language in the specification that talks about the central bottom portion. However, I do not think there's enough detail or explanation as to what this central bottom portion is or what it should do to understand if it's a separate embodiment or if it's just sort of another label for what's been identified as 66 in the specification.
If I read figure 13 as indicating 66 may be a structure and not a point, then isn't that embodiment of figure 13, preferred or not preferred, but clearly disclosed, isn't it excluded under the district court's current construction? Because the two seating surfaces are not directly touching one another.
I don't think so, because the court's construction did allow that the apex could be an area of a high point, and so I think that...
But it also required direct joinder of the seating surfaces, did it not?
It required direct joinder of the seating surfaces, but I think they are directly joined in that area of 66.
I guess the idea would be to draw a straight line through everything the district court said is they're joined together through the apex.
Yeah.
And if the apex is a single point, so be it. If the apex is a bigger structure, maybe something that's got a broad curve in it, then so be it. And then maybe central, I forget what the word is, central
bottom
surface portion could be equated in that way to an apex that has not just a point, but some broad curve to it.
Yeah.
Go ahead, please.
Are you saying that the apex surface is part of the seating surface or distinct from the seating surface?
The apex surface?
Or maybe I should just say apex. I don't want to throw too many surfaces in there at you.
Thank you. I appreciate it, Your Honor. So I think the apex does need to be on the bottom surface portion. I mean, all of this is on the bottom surface. I think one problem with Tomy's arguments here, and I think it came through in their introductory argument, they said everything is inclined. And I think we make this point in our brief, that what they're really trying to argue with these claim construction arguments is that pretty much any geometry on the bottom surface of the tub would be captured by this claim.
Is the answer that the apex is not part of the seating surface? Is that your answer?
Well, I guess the apex, what I believe I said was that the apex is part of the bottom surface. I don't think the apex is part of the seating surface necessarily, but it is where the distal edges of the seating surfaces would be joined.
There's a dispute, I think, maybe, that we haven't touched on. The appellant argues that the correct construction of apex should not require it to stretch most of the width of the tub. And I understand you to be saying you agree it doesn't have to stretch most of the width of the tub. You just don't think the district court required that. Is that your position?
I don't know that I'd say we would agree with it, but I think we agree that that wasn't part of the judge's construction, and I think the district court judge, wasn't part of the magistrate judge's construction, and that the district court judge at summary judgment made clear that they weren't relying on that for ruling on summary
judgment. So if for some reason we were sending this case back, what, if anything, would you have us do with this point of whether or not the apex has to stretch most of the width of the tub? Is there an issue for us?
I don't think there's an issue because I don't think it is actually part of the construction.
Well, arguably the magistrate, it was for the magistrate. The district court's ultimate decision said that part didn't matter of what the magistrate said.
Yeah, I agree with that. Though may I keep going?
Yep.
The magistrate judge did talk about this, but what the magistrate judge's discussion during claim construction about this point was in response to an argument the Summer Infant had made about how the apex should be a single point. And she was explaining how that doesn't make sense in light of the specification stretching, how in light of the embodiment of the specification stretching across the width of the tub.
That's one more. I'm not sure if we got your view on this sort of fundamental, dispute under, I think, what we called theory two, the seating surface and whether the hump and the vertical part of it could be part of the seating surface. Why should we not view that as, on this record, a fact dispute? The district court seems to have, I think it was maybe starting with the magistrate judge, say it just defies common sense to think that in this tub anyone would view any vertical part of the hold to be any component of the seating surface. Why isn't that simply a dispute of fact? They've got an expert who's willing to stand behind it. Why shouldn't that just go to the jury?
Sure. So I think our primary point on that is that no reasonable jury could conclude on this record.
What would make it unreasonable?
Yeah. So the reason is all the evidence, with some minor exceptions that I'll address, all point in fact that the accused tub has a flat bottom surface, and that the sides of the hump are not ever considered seats by anyone. We've got multiple references to how it's a stop, including by their own expert at deposition explaining how it serves and functions as a stop while also admitting that the flatter portions are the seating surface. Tomy's original position in this case, in the demand letter at Appendix 154 and in the 30B6 deposition at 1770, you know, their infringement theory was premised on the flat surfaces, not on the edges of the hump being a seating surface. So there's that as well. We have our expert Gordon's testimony and report as well about this, all basically siding with us on that. There's a part in the Gordon report, I think we put the images into our brief at page 5, of the child sitting in the tub, so a toddler sitting in the tub and an infant sitting in the tub, and how they're not using the sides of the wall as a seat, it's just a stop. And the only two things that Tomy has pointed to as raising a potential question of fact is a slide from Summer Infant's production that's for a proposed design for this tub. It's not the final design. If you look at it, you can see clearly it's not the final design of the tub.
It says contoured seat and points to the hump.
It says a contoured seat and it points to the area of the hump. The I dispute that the arrows pointing to the hump or was intended to point to the hump because there are two seats there and it just says contoured seats, so I believe it's referring to the general area. But beyond that, I don't think that outweighs all the other evidence and that it would be reasonable for a jury to conclude that. The other point of evidence they point to is the testimony of a former employee who was talking about the design around. And SummerInfant did implement a design around to avoid the last element of the claim, which we haven't talked about, which is the stacking height. The reference to potential infringement there is pretty clearly to the redesign of the stacking height, not about whether, you know, the claim as a whole would infringe, and that witness was not qualified to, you know, offer infringement opinions or anything like that.
So. Okay, I think we have to go.
All right, thank you.
Thank you. We'll have 4 minutes.
Let me just ask you if you have any specific questions regarding, otherwise I'll just hit some of them. No. Okay, you know, with respect to Judge Stark's question, everything that counsel had just laid out about what does this internal document mean, or what did their firm project engineer mean when he talked about infringement, all that, those are all factual questions. And those are all issues that can properly go before a jury. This question about whether a stop is a seat, I mean, a seat stops the downward movement of somebody who would otherwise, I guess, fall
right,
on the ground.
But this hump doesn't do that. The flat part does that. I guess the problem I'm having is a seating surface is a surface that you sit on, not sit against. And your theory is the seating surface encompasses things that you sit on and things you sit against. And that's where I'm having trouble.
I think that a seating surface is something that supports the weight in whole or in part of the occupant. And so...
Right, you understand why that's too broad for me to accept. Because that encompasses the backrest, that encompasses an armrest, it encompasses a headrest, it encompasses just about anything that could be said to.
But it's got
hip support in part the weight of the topic.
I'm sorry to interrupt. In conjunction with the rest of the claim, it's not too broad. In conjunction with the rest of the claim, it's got to be part of the bottom surface. So the armrest example that you gave would not be part of the bottom surface. The backrests are already claimed as a separate element. So. I do not believe
so
that.
So anything that is erected from the bottom surface that could be said to partially support the weight, you know, if the child leans in one direction versus another direction, then that's fair ground to be considered a seating surface.
Within the scope of the claim, yes. Just one final
footrest.
I'm sorry?
Is a footrest the seating surface? I never want to put my feet up a little bit, so let's get a little 4-inch raised area for my foot while I'm sitting in the bathtub.
Why wouldn't it be? It would be a seat for your feet.
This claim's a lot broader than I thought. Okay.
Well, and that was one issue that counsel raised a couple of times, and I just want to really quickly hit it, is that, and you had asked the questions about invalidity and the like, but, you know, we've already got a ruling on summary judgment of no invalidity, and that hasn't been challenged, so.
Can you help? How do the issues fit together? I've kind of lost track of that. We've talked about so many things. What do you, if you went on the direct joinder claim construction, where are we after that? Do we have to reach all these other issues, or?
No, I think we need to remand, because if the claim construction on joined at is incorrect, which obviously I think it is, then that pervades all the other issues. The summary judgment.
That's your first issue.
Yes.
So if let's just say hypothetically we agree with you on that, do we reach any other issues, or we just send it back for more proceedings on that claim construction?
Well, you would need to reverse
the exclusion
of the expert. Correct. And then obviously the summary.
But I thought you were still stuck with having nothing more than a flat horizontal seating surface.
Not
the judge said, you know, is not inclined, and so therefore you can't
Not with respect to all his opinions. I mean, like I said, because the summary judgment was after the claim construction, we based the summary judgment motion on the claim construction that the court had issued. But if that's wrong, then we have other evidence of that's not been presented here.
Would you have us reach what we called Theory 2 and all the other issues if, just say hypothetically, you won on the first claim construction issue? Should we go on and address these other
issues? Oh, you're asking me, if you agree that the claim construction is wrong, should we still decide whether summary judgment should have been granted in our favor?
Okay, that might be one way to put it, but...
I would like you to grant summary judgment in our favor so we don't have to go back, but it's...
Do we have to get to Theory 2 is my question. If you win on direct joinder, do we have to get to the seating surface issues one way or another?
I don't know if that's a question for me. That might be above my pay grade. I think that...
I mean, we'll make the ultimate decision.
Yeah, exactly.
We want your point of view. That's what he's asking for.
Oh, my point of view is if there's a reversal on the claim construction, those issues would have to be sent back unless you were fine, even under the court's incorrect claim construction, we would win on summary judgment. I don't know procedurally if that can happen or not, because you would have already found that the claim construction is wrong.
Thank you.
Okay, thank you very much. The case is submitted, and that concludes today's arguments.